So we'll continue this morning talking about His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Last few days, I was telling different stories about Prabhupada chastising some of us disciples for sleeping too much, eating too much and sleeping too much and sleeping in the morning. So we're going to continue that. But we're going to talk about the other side of that as well. This is why Prabhupada was sometimes, for us, was difficult to understand. You never knew what he was going to say. Prabhupada was a person, and he dealt with every situation, you know, accordingly. So we were talking about in Australia, he chastised us in Australia so much when we were sleeping in the afternoon. And then he chastised us again just 1 week later in Fiji for, again, sleeping, eating too much. So now we'll go to Mayapur. So what happened in Mayapur was, we all know the Lotus Building in Mayapur. And at that time it was so nice when Prabhupada was here, because that was the only building in Mayapur. It was very beautiful, just fields, rice paddies, and just open fields, and you could see the Ganga across the road. There were no shops anywhere on the road. There was no wall. It was very simple in 1973, 1974. And as we say, of course, Prabhupada, the first thing Prabhupada did was build guest houses. And Prabhupada said something very interesting about that, because he built residences for the devotees. And he said, not just immediately build a temple. And of course, whatever Prabhupada did, as much as his disciples and many others, they would glorify him. For the exact same thing, some people, they would criticize him. So they also criticized this as well, that the first thing he's doing is building rooms for people to stay. Why he doesn't, he should build a temple, right? The most important thing was Krishna. The Prabhupada said the opposite. He said, that's idol worship. He said, to build a temple first was idol worship. He says, most important thing is, he says, you take care of the devotees, then Krishna will come. So imagine Prabhupada, the way he did things. And he always knew exactly what to do, and he wasn't threatened. He didn't care what people in general say, because his activities, they spoke for themselves. So he did the same thing in Vrindavan. He built the guest house in Vrindavan, and then he built the temple. So he always took care of the devotees. And we know here in this community that's also the way things are done. Radhanath Maharaj, he does it himself. He takes care so much of his own god brothers and everyone. He's always willing to give himself 24 hours a day. And, of course, these are how Vaishnava acts, and this is what we see with our spiritual master, is that he always took care of the devotees. So in the same way, in Mayapur, Prabhupada had his room, and we would eat right in front of Srila Prabhupada's room in Mayapur. His entourage and sannyasis and temple presidents. There would be maybe 8 to 10 of us that would sit and take prasadam morning and afternoon. And prasadam in Mayapur has always been known for being very first class, and always used ghee. They always cooked in ghee in Mayapur, and still do, and always would serve on banana leaves. Everyone knows what the most opulent, right? The most opulent plate you can have is what? Banana leaf. That's the most opulent plate you can eat from, is banana leaf. And what is the second most opulent? Prabhupada has also said, he described all the different things that you can eat from. Gold? No, it's not gold. Something different. It's a stone. Yeah, marble. Marble, he said, was the second most opulent thing. Then after marble came gold, and then silver, and then clay, and then styrofoam. So, most opulent thing is banana leaf that you can eat from. So we would eat off banana leaves, and Prabhupada, almost every day while we were eating prasadam, especially breakfast prasadam, Prabhupada would come out and he would just chant japa. Prabhupada was always observant. He always saw everything that's going on. You also know this with Radhanath Maharaj. He appears like he's a sannyasi chanting and all, but he knows everything, right, that's going on here, everything everyone's doing and all the different things, what's clean, what's not clean. So Prabhupada, he saw everything. He knew what everyone was eating, how much you were eating. But he was just chanting japa, it would appear that he was just chanting japa and walking around. So he would come and then he would look and see the preparations that were there. So he was happy to see when we had nice prasadam. And the one time, you know, the devotee was serving me prasadam. I was saying yesterday how he told that Mataji Mahadevia, only give him 3 japatis when I was sick, you know. So then the young Bengali devotee Brahmachari was serving all of us, and then Prabhupada, you know, said something to him in Bengali right after he had served me prasadam. So then Prabhupada walked the other way, and I said, what did Prabhupada say? He said, he told me to give you lots of prasadam. So Prabhupada also wanted to see that I was eating. So the one day Prabhupada was there, and of course, he looked and he saw Prajumna wasn't eating with us. And this was at breakfast time. So Prabhupada said, where's Prajumna? Of course, and I said, oh, he's in his room, Prabhupada. And he said, well, why isn't he eating prasadam with everyone? And I said, no. So it was what had happened. Prabhupada had chastised Prajumna for sleeping too much. So Prajumna, of course we know Prajumna, he always was very well read. He read all about Ayurveda, anything that was Vedic, Prajumna was reading it. I remember him telling me when I first joined the party about washing hands, you know, and after you passed, you had to wash your right hand so many times and your left hand so many times. He would give all these instructions about what we were supposed to do, and I was like overwhelmed, you know, with instructions by Prajumna. So he had read, of course, in Ayurveda, and he was Vata, and it said that you can get all of your nourishment just by eating 10 almonds a day, blanched, soaked overnight, and you blanched them with a cup of milk. And if you just took that, you would get all the nutrition that you needed for the day. So he decided that's what he was going to do, because Prabhupada yelled at him for sleeping too much. So he wasn't going to take prasadam with anyone anymore. So this was his very first day he was missing breakfast prasadam. So immediately Prabhupada said, where's Prajumna? So there he is in his room, and he was always surrounded by books, Prajumna, you know, always had books stacked around him. And Prabhupada said, why aren't you taking prasadam? And immediately Prajumna said, well, Prabhupada, if I take prasadam, is all I do is sleep. And Prabhupada looked at him and he yelled. He said, so then sleep. He said, but you have to eat prasadam. He said, how will you survive if you don't eat prasadam? And again, Prajumna said, Prabhupada, I just sleep too much. And he said, so sleep. He said, sleep 10 hours a day if you have to sleep. He said, but take prasadam. He said, you must take prasadam. He said, even if you sleep all day and night, he said, still you have to eat. So Prajumna said, yes, Prabhupada. So then he came and he joined us. So this was also an instruction from Prabhupada. He said, sleep all day and night. He said, but you have to take prasadam. And then, of course, if you were sleeping, then he'd bring you in and he'd yell, why are you sleeping? And he said, you can't sleep. So you had to do everything. That was Prabhupada's process. Everything was the most important. So somehow you had to understand how to do everything, how to eat lots of prasadam. We had to eat lots of prasadam, but we also had to be up early in the morning, and we had to chant all our rounds, and you had to be engaged in service 24 hours a day. So all these things had to be done at the same time. No, Prabhupada would say, Krishna consciousness is common sense. Just like I made that title, what is the difficulty? So this also, he would say so much. Krishna consciousness is common sense. And he would say, do the needful. So we have to do. We have to be very practical. I remember once, this was in Vrindavan, and this was in September 1974. And again, it was right after Srila Prabhupada had been very ill, and I was taking care of him. So many of us were taking care of him 24 hours a day. And then it so happened that I got malaria. As we didn't find out until years later that what was then the servants' quarters was like malaria central in Vrindavan at Krishna Balaram. There were these mosquitoes there, but they were all carrying this malaria virus. And of course, like many of you do now, I just slept on the floor and no mosquito net, and I just lie down like brahmachari, you know, be very austere and lie on the floor. And I thought I was transcendental, so even if I was bitten, I figured I couldn't get, you know, I wouldn't get sick. But all I did was get sick. So now I had malaria for about the third time. But at that time, you wouldn't even know. You know, you just ignored, right? You ignored your body. So I was ignoring it, and I was so sick. But I just continued with my service, and I thought, well, I'll just get better, you know. Because that's what we think. If we do our service, and don't worry about it. Krishna will take care of everything. Just surrender to Krishna and do your service. So I remember one day, because I used to play the mridanga many times when Prabhupada would lead the kirtan. That also I learned to do because of Prabhupada one day in Juhu. And back then, 1973, you know, there were not so many people were very good at anything on instruments, you know, mridangas, kartels, harmonium. So I could at least keep a beat. You know, I knew how to keep a beat and a rhythm and follow Prabhupada. And I remember one day he was leading kirtan before class. And Prabhupada always, he had a pattern when he led kirtan, when he sang Jaya Radha Madhava, and after the first verse, and then he would start hitting his kartels and he would pick it up. And that day he was doing that, and he was trying to, and this devotee, brahmachari, and he was just playing the mridanga, and he just kept playing at the same rate. And Prabhupada's looking, and the boy, and he's still just playing the mridanga to his own, as we say, he was the beat of a different drummer. He wasn't following Prabhupada. He was leading the kirtan, you know, with his mridanga. So then Prabhupada looked at me, and he just went like that. I grabbed that mridanga, like that was it. As it was said, Prabhupada, when you would be in tune, you just had to look at Prabhupada, and he would tell you, he could tell you so much just by looking at you. So he just looked at me, and he looked at that boy playing, and he just made these eyes like, grab that mridanga and do something with this kirtan, you know. So, anyway. So now we were in Vrindavan, and I remember I was playing mridanga at this kirtan, and my hands, they just couldn't even keep up on the sides of the drum. I was so weak. So I thought, well, I must really be sick with something. But then I just sat there as we did. Every day I would sit at class by Srila Prabhupada and never, ever fall asleep and would never even think about nodding out in front of Srila Prabhupada's class. But I was so sick. I remember sitting there and Prabhupada was speaking and I actually was just like almost fainting because of illness. And Prabhupada was speaking and he stopped and he just looked at me and he said, if you're tired, go sleep. And I was actually dying. But he said, if you're tired, then go sleep. So immediately, of course, I just got myself together and sat up for the rest of the class. But then later on, I was in the room and I had become so ill that I was just lying there on the floor. And as was our method at that time in ISKCON, especially in India. We were all Westerners in India. There were, you know, very few local devotees, one or two here or there. And everyone was looking out for themselves. You know, that's again what we did in India. It was very difficult, very austere, and so much illness and no money. When someone came to India, the authorities would generally, if they had any money, they would take their money, they would take their passports, they would take their return tickets. It was very difficult. So I was with Prabhupada, so I was in a little different situation. But even sitting there in that room, I was lying on the floor, literally dying. And devotees were taking prasadam. It was prasadam time, and no one even saw me over there. And Prabhupada walked through. And he saw me lying on the floor. And he said, "Who's taking care of Shrutakirti?" And everyone was like, "Shrutakirti." And he said, "Someone take care of him." He said, "Call a doctor." He said, "Look at him." He said, "He's lying there. He's ill." He said, "Get him something to drink." He said, "Someone make some nimbu pani. Get him a drink." He said, "Get him a bed to lie in." He said, "He needs to be lying in a bed, not on the floor." And Prabhupada just started yelling at everyone, and they were all just like eating, you know. And they're all going, "Yes, Prabhupada, yes, Prabhupada." And Prabhupada was just walking to the bathroom, you know, so he saw all this going on, and he was just like, "What are you doing?" He said, "Take care of this." So then they got a doctor, and I had malaria. So I had had it for I don't know how many days. So malaria comes, you know, if you've ever had malaria, and it's very serious. And each day you just get worse and worse, and then you die. But immediately I felt better. Even I didn't have any medicine, because I thought, "Oh, well, Prabhupada loves me." You know, nobody else knew I was lying there, but Prabhupada cared so much. So, but it was difficult to understand what to do when it came to our austerities, huh? Because he would preach so much, you know, from the Vyasasan. He would preach about minimizing and so many austerities. And then devotees, they would start to take up these processes, you know, they would become very austere and they would try to minimize sleep and minimize eating. But then in class, they would just fall asleep, you know, so this was their austerity. At that time, you know, the temple commander, he would have like a water pistol, a spray bottle with it. It would just, so it would sit there and you would just wait for someone. Yeah. It was, you know, there was an eagerness, hoping who will nod their heads, because you could blast them with water. But it was a regular event due to not sleeping so much, you know, and that was the least. And then, of course, there were the car accidents in the vans, you know, traveling Sankirtan, because the devotees sleeping 4 hours a night, and then he'd be driving 10 devotees in a van. So we have to be, Prabhupada say, you have to use your common sense. That's Krishna consciousness, you know. Use your intelligence. Of course, we know now that's also Kali Yuga. Even common sense is not even there. You have to learn. Someone has to instruct you what common sense is, what it means to have common sense, because we don't have it. So Prabhupada would show us these things. So he would speak the most high, absolute truth, but he also wanted us to be able to practically apply it. Huh? Not that we just like robots try to do things. We have to be practical in everything. So even as in his instructions to each one, just like telling Prajumna, you sleep 10 hours, whatever it is, but you have to eat. You have to use your intelligence. You can't stop eating because there's some difficulty there. You think, "Oh, eating is causing me all my disturbance." Because the most important thing was health. And we say, Prabhupada, we know he took care of his health very well. And he said three things. You know, after he came to America and suffered his heart attack, he said three things kept him alive. And that was his morning walk, and his massage, and his Ayurvedic medicine, which he only took one medicine, Jagendra Ras, it was called. And his morning walk, that was prescribed by what's described in the Lilamrita as one crazy drunkard doctor, right? He told Prabhupada that he couldn't take cold bath, that it would be bad for his heart, And he told him he should take a walk every morning. And Prabhupada took a walk every morning for the next 10 years. He missed very few morning walks because of an instruction like that from someone that was, again, described as a drunkard, a doctor that was just some drunkard. But Prabhupada took that as coming from Krishna himself, that he should do that. And he did it. And religiously, his morning walk, it became an institution. Because without your health, you can't do anything. If you're not healthy, you can't chant. And that was also on the top of the list, right? Things to do. Said health. And next was chanting. So health is so important in our lives, because if we're not healthy, then you can't chant, you can't preach, you can't do so many things. But these things, they were always creeping in, these different rules, just like Chaturmas. I always remember going to Mayapur when all the sannyasis were observing Chaturmas. At that time, it was very simple observance. You stop shaving. You know, that was a Gaudiya Math. You could always recognize devotees in Gaudiya Math, right? Because during Chaturmas, their beards get bigger and bigger. So at that time, the sannyasis in particular, and some of the other devotees, now they had been in Mayapur. So they stopped shaving, and I don't know what else. They might have been following some of the other rules and guidelines. But as soon as Prabhupada saw them, he said, "Shave." He said, "Simply hippies." He said, you were hippies, and again, you want to become hippies. He said, so shave. So Prabhupada didn't like that. And then they were developing other things they wanted to do during Chaturmas. And Prabhupada said, so many rules and regulations. They wrote a letter, should we do this? Should we do this? We had our big, during Chaturmas, we fasted from milk 1 month. This is what Prabhupada instituted for us. 1 month we fasted from milk, right? Yogurt, spinach, and Urad Dal. That was a very difficult one. We didn't have any Urad Dal in the U.S. But that was it. That's all Prabhupada gave us to do. But gradually, as the devotees came here to India, and went to Navadvip and Vrindavan, they started hearing so many things. You should do this, you should do this. Ekadasi fast, there were so many different rules. For us, it was just no grains, no beans, no grains. That's what Prabhupada gave us to do. So he said, so many rules and regulations, he said, everybody wants to follow. See, this was our Western mentality too. We like the idea of different rules and things. He said, just chant your 16 rounds and follow the regulative principles. He said, do that. He said, you can't even do that, which we weren't good. See, that's like we say, we like following Prabhupada's example. Prabhupada drank 7-Up. Everybody in the world wanted to drink. All the devotees were eager to drink 7-Up. So we like to pick the things that we could do. But the most important things Prabhupada said was to chant 16 rounds. Follow the regulative principles. He said, just do these things. He says, that's good. And even he said, even on Ekadasi, or fast days, he says, most important thing, he says, was preaching. That's our austerity, is we preach. If you want to do something that you find difficult, then preach more. Engage yourself in spreading Krishna consciousness. That's what Prabhupada said. Even if it means you eat on a fast day, he said, if you have to eat to preach, then you should eat and then go preach. So he didn't care for this sitting back, chanting, 128 rounds, and sit back and sleep in the name. That's what he would say, sleep in the name of chanting, huh? Just to sit there with eyes closed. He said, and sleep very nicely. So Prabhupada always stressed this, the preaching part. So, and the other thing, of course, we know in Chaturmas, it's also there. I saw a list, I think it was here. It might have been in Delhi somewhere. I saw a list of all the guidelines. And one of the things it said was, don't criticize any devotees. This was also one of the guidelines. And imagine That's like the Ten Commandments, you know, telling you to do the things that automatically you should do. You should know better. Like Prabhupada said that the commandments were put out because the people were so fallen, they had to be told not to eat meat, not to commit adultery, you know, not to do these things. So here we have this Chaturmas observance, and one of the guidelines is don't criticize devotees. That's automatic. You shouldn't have to say that as a separate guideline during Chaturmas, right? We don't criticize Vaishnava's business. Never criticizes another devotee. So just see how these things are there. We have to make a special attempt. But it was there in Mayapur where Prabhupada pointed these things out, that he would see this. Prabhupada, gossip. Prabhupada liked the English word gossip is very, very good. It's like prajalpa. But gossip, of course, is very, I mean, just talking about others. Not that you can do anything, but you just talk about others, what they did wrong, what they're not doing properly. So whenever we were in Mayapur, Prabhupada would hear the gossip. So Prabhupada would become so upset. And in his room, because the other rooms, we know they would be shared by devotees, by leaders, by GBCs, sannyasis, temple presidents, who would come together just sometimes once or twice a year. So automatically the tendency was there to say, oh, what's what's this Maharaj doing and what's that one doing? But what Prabhupada heard was gossip. So then 2 years in a row, Prabhupada called me in his room, said the same thing. Tell them to stop talking. He said, tell them to chant Hare Krishna. He said, simply gossip. Imagine, this was in Mayapur Dham. Huh? He said, simply they're gossiping. He said, tell them they should just chant. He said, this gossip is so bad, he said. He said, it destroys your Krishna consciousness, gossip. He didn't say it hindered it. Didn't say it held it back. He said it actually destroys it. What Krishna consciousness you have, that offense alone is enough to completely just destroy your creeper in Krishna consciousness. He said it's so dangerous. He said, so tell them to stop. And then I was 22-year-old boy going out there to all these guys. And I said, Prabhupada said to be quiet. That's all I would say. I just couldn't do it. I would be afraid of them, you know. So I say, Prabhupada said you should be quiet. I said, he's trying to read or he's trying to chant. I said, and then he says it's too loud. But each time he would tell me that. So then the one time it was so nice was then he called me in also. And he said, whenever my godbrother comes, the one godbrother, huh? Maharaj, he said, whenever he comes, he says, is all he does is gossip. He said, so next time he comes, he said, I don't want to see him. He said, don't let him in. So now this was Prabhupada's godbrother, sannyasi godbrother in Navadvip, you know, from Mayapur. So I said, yes, Prabhupada. So that very day, because he's coming almost every day, he was younger, maybe 15, 20 years younger than Prabhupada. So that very day, Prabhupada's resting after lunch, and he comes walking up the steps in Mayapur. And I'm at the top of the stairs, right in front of Prabhupada's quarters. So immediately he sees me, you know. I'm here to see Maharaj, you know. And again, it was normally this was difficult for me, but Prabhupada was resting, so it wasn't so bad. So I just said, oh, Prabhupada, he's resting right now, so we can't disturb him when he's resting. So now he was Prabhupada's godbrother, and he said, well, he said, you know, Maharaj said, whenever I want, I can see him. He said, and I want to see him. And I said, well, that's fine, I said, but I said, I can't wake him up while he's resting. I said, so if you just want to wait or something, I said, I don't know, it could be another hour, it could be more, I said. But if you want to wait, I said, that's okay. So he was very upset with me. I was offensive to him. So just as he's just standing there and Prabhupada opens his bedroom door, you know, and just like the sunshine, you know, and Prabhupada had been resting. So Prabhupada was so beautiful. He always looked so beautiful. And in Mayapur, it was very humid and warm. And he just had his dhoti on, so he had no top on. And he came, and you could see that he was resting, but he smiled very broadly, and he was fixing his dhoti, you know, getting up out of the bed, and he was just fixing his dhoti, very relaxed. And he saw his godbrother, and he said, "Oh, Maharaj," he said, "come in," he said, "sit down." He said, "I'll be right back." And Prabhupada walked to the bathroom, which was down at the end of the building in Mayapur. So now both Maharaj and I, we go in and we sit down in Prabhupada's sitting room, and just very quiet, you know, he's not saying anything, and I'm just sitting there chanting, and thought, "Oh, here we go." So Prabhupada went to the bathroom, and then he comes walking back again, and he's very bright and happy. And he said, "Oh," he said, "it's so good to see you again." And Prabhupada goes and he sits down in the chair, and I'm sitting and waiting. And of course, immediately his godbrother starts criticizing, you know, he said, "Your disciple," he said, "he is giving me such a hard time." He said, "I've come here to see you." He said, "and he's telling me I can't see you, you're resting." And Prabhupada looked at me. And he said, "Shruta Kirti," he said, "I told you, whenever Maharaj comes," he said, "immediately you should let him into the room." And I just said, "Yes, Prabhupada." I said, "I'm sorry." So then I got up and I left. And I have a big smile on my face, you know. Prabhupada never said anything to me afterwards because he knew what he had said also. But he didn't want to offend his godbrother also, and he wanted to encourage him. But as what he said is, he said, is all he does, I didn't say before, he said, "I don't want to see him." He said, "is all he does is talk nonsense." He said, "he comes in and he says, in this mutt, the disciples, they're doing like this." And he said, "my disciples are doing so many things." He said, "he never talks about Krishna. He never talks philosophy." He said, "he just talks about what everyone is doing." And Prabhupada said, "I'm not interested in hearing these things." He said, "if he would speak philosophy," he said, "I would sit with him." He said, "we could sit and talk so many nice things and talk about Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, talk philosophy." He said, "but just talks nonsense." He said, "so I don't want to see him." But then when he came in, Prabhupada chastised me. He said, "what's wrong with you?" But then he didn't say anything. But then he sat there and again he spoke, and Prabhupada would always try to bring whoever was with him, Prabhupada would bring him up another level, another level. So he always gave him opportunity like that. But so that was one of my favorite moments with Prabhupada, because we shared a little secret together. So what do you think, Govinda? Huh? Speak more? Okay. Any questions at all? This point? What would you like to hear about? Okay, you can.
When devotees come together, so I think one of the main subjects of conversation is, you know, what other devotees are doing or what's happening, and we always thought that's like normal, but now you're saying that comes under category of gossip. So what exactly is that?
Well, no, I mean, there of course we do come together, but that's what sadhu sangha is. It's just like Govinda's come back from Goa, he can tell everyone all about how the preaching is progressing there, we're getting a temple. There's always, we want to hear about how Krishna consciousness is expanding. Huh? So one can come back and tell everyone how many books you distributed today, what the person said. There's things which are very enlivening. Like Prabhupada was saying, like just like the birds. He said in the morning, he said we hear like here, in the early morning, you hear all these beautiful sounds, these birds chirping and everything. So, what are they saying? They're talking. All the living entities are talking. It's not just noise. But Prabhupada said the birds, in the morning, they're all saying, where are you going to go get food? So they're talking to each other, and the one's saying, well, I'm going to go over here and try to find food over here. And so they're talking like that. He said, in the evening they come back to the nest, and again they're chirping, you hear. In the morning and evening you hear all this chirping. So what are they talking about? They're saying, where I found food. You know, the one saying, oh, there was lots of food over here, you can get food there. So this is what the birds are doing. So this isn't devotee's business. The devotee's business is, as Prabhupada said, you talk philosophy, you talk pastimes of the Lord, where you encourage each other. We have to encourage one another in Krishna consciousness and describe preaching activities. One has to walk, it's a very straight line. And we can see, it happens so often when we talk, that the tendency is, unless we remain conscious, that the talking has a tendency to degrade, you know, after a few minutes, after a few seconds, after a few minutes, after 10 minutes, and something will slip in, you know, from the weakest party, something will slip in, and then everyone can be drawn in so easily, so quickly. So that's in the material world, that's natural, because in the material world, the more we make someone look bad, the better we are, you know, the better we look. So even in our neophyte stage, if we criticize others, then you're just trying to step on top of them, you know, it makes you in a better position. But it all comes out of envy, you know, all this comes from envy. So these are things we have to train ourselves. You know, that's austerity. See, these are the austerities that are important. That's controlling the tongue. See, you see, like when we talk about controlling the tongue, we say take prasadam. We don't say eat very little bit. We say eat only prasadam. But the other control of the tongue is not talk nonsense. So we can do the only eat prasadam part. But more important then is to see how much prasadam I'm eating is what else we're doing with the tongue when it's not busy vibrating Hare Krishna, or if it's not busy taking prasadam, what's the business of the tongue? So that's controlling the tongue. See? And that's real austerity, you know. And it should become automatic. It should become easy for one that's advanced. I see it with Radhanath Maharaj. You know, if you say anything critical about someone, he just like goes off. He won't even remain there. He just disappears, you know, or he'll just change the subject. He will not even let it enter into the conversation. Doesn't want to hear it. Just like covers his ears. Doesn't want to hear any devotee being offended in any way. So this is a wonderful quality. So of course, when we're involved, we're leaders, we're management, sometimes we obviously have to get involved in doing things, but it has to come from a very pure place, not from a material place. It has to come from a place of encouraging how to help someone in their Krishna consciousness. So we have to be very thoughtful, very honest with ourselves, and we have to know, Is this my service? Is this my service to do this? And if it's not, of course, then the best thing is to avoid altogether. But otherwise, it's so easy to find fault. What did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati say? He had one of his famous sayings, he's such a scholar. His words, his usage of English was just amazing. And he said that it's only because I'm honeycombed. You know, with the honeycomb has all those holes. He said, it's only because I'm honeycombed with faults that I take to the task of finding fault in others. And the devotee sees that if he sees a fault in someone else, he sees it as a reflection of what a fault in himself. See, otherwise you don't see faults. Sometimes people would say that about Prabhupada, that he could see right through me and he could see all my faults. Prabhupada wasn't looking at our faults. You know, that's not the business of a Vaishnava. Prabhupada would see that spark of Krishna consciousness in there and he would make it grow. He would do everything to make that grow. He didn't see us and think, oh, this person's had so much illicit sex, so much intoxication, so many births he's been falling. No, just out of compassion, Prabhupada He would just give love, and he would see how to make this person more Krishna conscious. So that's the vision of a devotee. He says in one purport that the tendency of a devotee is not to notice faults. So then we can know if we want to, these are all barometers, a gauge of how we're doing in Krishna consciousness. We can see by how we see things, how we see other devotees, how we see ourselves. So then the most important thing is you work on yourself. You become pure. So you become pure by practicing the austerities in this way. See, these were the austerities that Prabhupada saw as important. These are the important austerities. Not worrying about eating prasadam off of the floor, you know, and things. No, that's easy stuff. The real work is to work on yourself, to work on your consciousness. Huh? That's the real work. Not criticize. Now, that's a very good one. 12 months a year, you know, not for 4 months. Yes. Anything? So, yes, okay.
You always mention about all these wonderful pastimes, but when did you find time to write this? When in such a busy schedule and trying to please Prabhupada?
When did I
find some time to write the regular journal?
I didn't. That was my, of course, that was my regret. Like, just like Hari Sari, we know he kept such a nice journal. In when I was with Prabhupada, well, other than him, no one kept a journal. He somehow or other, he did it to his credit, and it was very wonderful. But Shyama Sundar, Prajumna, so many secretaries, so many servants, we were so much just in the moment of being with Srila Prabhupada, and we would record. And again, when I was first with him in 1972, the state of the art of recording was very, very bad. There was not even, cassette recorders had not even come out. You know, 8-track tape recorders which came and went, they weren't there. Nothing was there except these reel-to-reel machines. And you can see on many morning walks, I'm holding this big reel-to-reel tape recorder. And just each reel of tape was very expensive. And when you came to India, you couldn't get them at all. So you was only what you brought to India with you. So recording itself was for pretty much safe for classes and conversations, morning walk conversations. And as far as a diary, you know, very few diaries were there. My first recording of it was with Satsarup Maharaj in 1978 when he was collecting information for the Lilamrita. And he visited me. I was in Hawaii at the time, and he stayed with me for 3 days. And he took, now there were cassettes, he took cassette recordings of everything. And he had a mass of devotees working for him because it was a BBT project. So everything was transcribed onto papers. And he only used, you know, what he took out and used. But there was so much information was there. And amazingly enough, just before the place in Gitanagari where everything was stored, burnt to the ground and destroyed everything, I had asked for copies of all my transcripts. So he mailed me a stack of papers this thick. So from those transcripts is where the book came. But it was very fortunate that everything else was burnt in the fire at Gitanagari. All these transcripts from so many devotees that they had recorded were taken. But anyway, I was able to get them. I still have them at our place. I still have the original transcripts from those conversations. So that was in 1978. So my memory was still okay. And as I read it, of course, I, you know, saw many things, and that's what I, you know, tried to do in writing, was so that you could see it when you read it. So. And so there it is. Yes. Go ahead, you can speak loudly. God brothers what? Well, sure. Yes. No, just like that, many times, that's what Prabhupada would do. He would use you as the person to go out and tell people what not to do. You know, and they would become, tell them to chant quietly, you know, because it would disturb Prabhupada. Once in New Dwarka, in the old temple room, Prabhupada's quarters were like up there, overlooking the temple room almost. So if he would open his door, it was like on the high part of the wall, and the deities were over there, and someone was in the temple room chanting, and the deities were resting, and they were chanting very loud in the temple room. So Prabhupada came out and yelled to me. He said, "Who's chanting?" He said, "Don't they know the deities are resting?" He said, "Tell them, you know." So I would very often have to do those kind of things. And for me, it was difficult, but I did it. Now it would be easy for me, but at the time, I always felt very insignificant. So, but he would always tell me things like that. So then they would become upset with me. They wouldn't become upset with Prabhupada. But I think many times they would think that I was making it up, you know. Especially with the chanting part, because everyone thought that their chanting was just, you know, completely pure and transcendental, and that Prabhupada would love to hear it. And so they would do that, and when they were around Prabhupada, they would chant louder so that Prabhupada could hear them chanting, you know. And they thought that was, Prabhupada would like hearing them chant. And Prabhupada, he would always tell them to chant quiet, you know. Yes.
You are not retaliating, like you are very calm. He says something to you and you are not answering back.
Yes, okay. All of them, when he was chastising me, they would be like that. But I was thinking of another one. It was one that I liked so much. Was because he wasn't chastising me, but he was directing it at me. And that's what he would do. He would direct it at you. You know, so when we were on a big airplane, big 747, so there were three seats, and then they had like five or six seats in the middle and another three seats on the end. And it was just a short flight from New York City to Detroit. So it was an inexpensive flight. Prabhupada was flying from New York to Detroit, and it was 9 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, many devotees found out Prabhupada, he was on this plane. So, of course, they all wanted to be around Prabhupada, right? You know, when you could. And traveled to Detroit with Srila Prabhupada. So, again, Prabhupada always sat at the window seat. So he was on the left side, just like here. And here's the window plane, and all the seats are going straight across. So he sat there at the window, and I was next to Prabhupada, and then there was no one next to me. But then, in the row, the very same row, and in the row in front, it was filled with over a dozen devotees flying from New York to Detroit on this morning flight. So you can imagine, just imagine sitting next to Prabhupada, and sometimes 10-hour flight, you would be next to Prabhupada, and you would just have to chant and read and chant and read and chant and read, because that's what you did, you know, and just sit there, sometimes take a little prasadam. But here was a very short flight. It was like 1 hour flight. So all the devotees were so excited to be with Prabhupada. But Prabhupada was sitting there at the window, and then I was next to him. And then all these devotees are there. So the plane takes off, and within 10 minutes, every devotee's like, and Prabhupada's right there, you know, and all the devotees, you see, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. And Prabhupada looks, and he just sees all these devotees, like him there, just going down. And Prabhupada starts yelling at me. He said, "Why are all the devotees sleeping?" He said, "Look at them all." He said, "Every devotee is sleeping." He said, "All like dead men." That was one of his favorite words, dead men. And then he looks and he says, "No one else on the plane is asleep." He said, "All the karmis." It was so funny. Prabhupada would always say, "Karmis." He said, "All the karmis are awake." He said, "They're all going to work," which is what karmis do, right? They fruit of work very hard. He said, "But all the devotees are sleeping." He said, "Why are all the devotees sleeping?" And I'm like, and I always thought, because they don't sleep at night, most of them. That's why they're not sleeping, because they, when Prabhupada would go to a temple, they would be working sometimes, you know, almost 24 hours a day, painting temples and cleaning and doing so many things. Other than every day this was going on as well, that they would be falling asleep. But he would go on, and he keeps saying, "Why are they sleeping?" You know. And then I'm just, so I said, "I wasn't sleeping." You know, I'd be there and I'd be chanting, but I would get in such anxiety because Prabhupada would yell at me. He wouldn't yell at them, and I didn't go over to any of them. And then he'd just shake his head, and he'd say, "Just," but he didn't like seeing us sleeping like that. Better you get your sleep in at night, what you need, you know. That's why you have to use your intelligence when it comes to this eating and sleeping principle. Not that you go on some preaching program and, you know, your guest is serving you prasadam and your head falls in the head falls in the dal, you know. I've done that almost. They brought me some years ago to Juhu, and I flew all, you know, and immediately Sridhar Maharaj, "We have this program." It was midnight. I hadn't slept for I don't know how, and he's bringing me, and I'm like holding my eyes open, trying to be a very nice, cordial devotee, Prabhupada disciple, and as all they saw was this person falling asleep in front of them, you know. So we have to pick our spots for sleeping. Prabhupada, he would take what you could call like power naps sometimes, you know. He would take 15 minutes. He would just in his spot there, even sometimes during translating. And then he would just lie back and he would rest, and then he would get up and he would do. So sometimes it appears at nighttime he would get 3-4 hours, and then after lunch maybe half hour, sometimes an hour. But the rest, see, Prabhupada, when he was up, you saw Prabhupada was always so enthusiastic, so much enthusiasm, Prabhupada had always to preach. Because he said, "What is preaching? What is it? It's our life." That's what Prabhupada wanted. That's our life. All this other, everything else is to support preaching. And he said preaching in every, all of its forms, everything here, the deity worship, whatever it is, all preaching. So that we have to have our life in that way. Yes.
Hare Krishna. You mentioned you were cooking at New Vrindavan when you first became Prabhupada's servant. I was wondering, what were the circumstances at the time for Prabhupada acquiring a new servant, and what were some of your first interactions? And why were you chosen specifically?
Well, the circumstances was Prabhupada left Los Angeles. His servant had been a brahmachari boy. And Los Angeles was a very scary place for brahmacharis in the 70s, New Dwarka. At that time, of course, in the West, the society, there's so many brahmacharis, so many brahmacharinis. And the kitchen was, Prabhupada told me, the kitchen, he said, was a very dangerous place for a brahmachari, he said. So his servant was cooking for Prabhupada in the kitchen. But then he remained there and he got married. So Prabhupada left Los Angeles and came to New Vrindavan, and he had no servant. So this every year, pretty much a servant lasted 1 year or less. You know, that was like the shelf life of a Prabhupada servant. So I had been Kirtanananda's servant, even in New Vrindavan, and he put me in the kitchen, and I was the cook, since I had gotten Brahman initiation in Los Angeles, in New Dwarka in May. So as soon as I got back to New Vrindavan, which was growing, already growing farms, bigger and bigger all the time, so I became the head cook in New Vrindavan, which meant you were the cook. A head cook meant you cooked. there were no one under you. You did all the cooking. From 3:30 in the morning to, you know, set up the plates for the deities until 9 o'clock at night, I was in charge of cooking. So I cooked for all the devotees and for the deities, and I talked to Kirtanananda just a few months ago, and I asked him as well. I said, did you have a plan? Because the night before Prabhupada left New Vrindavan, Kirtanananda came in to me and he said, do you want to be Prabhupada's servant? And I said, yes. You know, so that next morning I left with him. So I just asked because I never discussed with him before, but I saw him in New York just a few months ago for the first time in many years. And I said to him, did you have a plan? You know, were you thinking that, were you training me up to be Prabhupada's servant? He said, no. He said, you were my servant. He said, and Prabhupada needed a servant. And he said, I thought I could accomplish two things at once. You know, he said, I thought you were a good servant to me, you'd be a good servant to Prabhupada. So he offered me to Prabhupada. That was his offering. You know, I was a good man, you know, good brahmachari, but not indispensable. No one was indispensable. So I went off the very next day with Prabhupada. But it was just good fortune. Very good fortune, yeah. And my first meeting, I tell that a lot, but I'll tell it, was the very next morning, Kirtanananda brought me into Prabhupada's room, which was a very little farmhouse called Madhuban in New Vrindavan. There were different farms they were buying, and this was a really small, single-story, we call it a rancher house, just had three little rooms, no running water. And that was the first time I met Prabhupada as his servant. And it was like 5 o'clock in the morning, and of course Prabhupada was up, and he was behind his desk, and he just had a little desk lamp on. That's what he was always have when he did his translating work. He didn't have big lights in the rooms. It always was dark with the desk lamp over the books. And Kirtananand and I went in and offered obeisances, and then he said, Prabhupada, this is Sruta Kirti, he's going to be your servant. And Prabhupada just nodded, didn't show any, you know, any emotion. I just said, okay. And he said, his name's Sruta Kirti, he said, and he said he's a very good cook. This Kirtananda had taught me some cooking. So he said, he's a very good cook, but he doesn't know how to massage. And Prabhupada said, anyone can massage. So then Prabhupada stood up and he grabbed his lota off the table. And I always say that it was very interesting because it was the first thing I ever heard about Prabhupada when I became a devotee a year before was Prabhupada's lota in Russia. When he was in Russia for 3 days, and I say he didn't, they had to get milk. And there was nothing to put the milk in. You know, standing in line, there were no cans, no bottles. So they used Prabhupada's lota. So this is what they were telling me. Everyone, we would talk about Prabhupada in the temples, you know, and they were saying, you know, they put milk in Prabhupada's lota. And I didn't know what a lota was, you know, it didn't mean anything to me. And they said time, place, and circumstance. You know, that was one of the catchphrases in ISKCON. Time, place, and circumstance. So, because there was no proper container, they used the lota. So, now, a year and a half later, 16 months had gone, now I'm Prabhupada's servant. And Prabhupada picked up his lota. So I saw Prabhupada's lota, and the first time I ever saw a lota. And he picked up this metal thing, and he said, "Follow me." And he stood up, and Prabhupada was very short, you know. And he said, "Follow me," in very deep mourning voice. Prabhupada had this mourning voice. And he just walked out the door. So I followed him out the door. And we walked like 10 meters. And he said, "Wait here." So I stopped. And then Prabhupada kept walking another 10, 20 meters. And he went into behind the trees. Because there was no bathroom in the house. So then he came back and he handed it to me and he said, "Wash it with dirt and water." He said, "Then put it back at my desk." So that was my first service, was washing that lota that I didn't know anything about. And then I understood too, it was Prabhupada's menial servant, take care of whatever chore. And he was very grave, you know, that first time. You know, so I was felt very afraid almost to be around Prabhupada. I had read Krishna book to him in the past, so many things, and he was very sweet. But now it seemed like I'd become his servant, you know, so I had my position was servant. Then of course it changed very nice. Prabhupada was so nice to me as the days went by, so it became sweet. But that was the first meeting, and it was very nice. I really appreciated it a lot, the way I was introduced like that. Prabhupada had nothing to do with me becoming his servant. He didn't. But whatever Krishna provided, you could really see that with Prabhupada. When it came to himself, whatever Krishna provided, Prabhupada was satisfied. He didn't complain. This is, you know, he didn't have. He had sometimes two of us. Very often just two of us would travel with him when he went to Australia, different places, because cost of tickets were expensive. So he just would have his servant and a secretary or secretary Sanskrit editor like that. So he didn't travel with 10 people, 20 people. It was just never more than three, and sometimes just two of us. So we stop here? You're in charge. Any more? One more question? Any questions? Yes, Prabhu.
You shared with us the experiences that you had with Paramahamsa Swami. And who was actually the secretary at that time. So during your time as a servant, was there some other secretaries also?
There were many secretaries. 2.5 years I was with Prabhupada. Shyamasundar was there for like first 6 or 8 months. And then after he left, they had this idea that Prabhupada would have a different secretary every month, a different GBC, for 1 month, and that way they would get personal association with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada called me in and he said, "This is going to be difficult." He said, "So you're going to have to try to maintain some, you know, continuity amongst all these coming in and out." And it didn't work. Prabhupada needed a full-time secretary. So like it was Hansa Duda 1 month, and then it was Jagadish 1 month, and Bhagavan 1 month. And then Brahmananda came and became his secretary again, Brahmananda Maharaj. And then after Brahmananda, then I was Paramahamsa Swami. So Shyamasundar, Brahmananda and Paramahamsa, they were mainly, while I was Prabhupada's servant, I different times with them as secretary. And they, of course, were all very different in how they did things. Once Prabhupada said to one of them, he said, "You don't move a pin from here to here without asking me." So he was very, So he accepted as a secretary, but imagine, couldn't do anything without asking, without asking Prabhupada. So, because it was a lot of fun with Prabhupada in some ways, because Prabhupada would sit behind his desk and he would travel all over the world by sitting behind his desk. He didn't go anywhere, but he would say, I'm going to go here and we're going to do this and then we're going to go do... And I always thought that, you know, it was imminent that in a few days we were going to be going to this place and that place, but sometimes we didn't go anywhere. Prabhupada just stayed in Mayapur, he would stay in Bombay. But he would talk about it like it was happening. And if you didn't know any better, you could literally start sending telegrams out and saying, Prabhupada's going to be in Australia from this and this time, or, you know, he's going to go here, he's going to go there. Because he talked about it like it was definitely going to happen. But until he said, make some arrangement, don't do anything, don't write any letters, don't send any telegrams. Because it's happened, I saw it happen with one of his temporary secretaries. He sent a telegram off saying Prabhupada's coming, and Prabhupada didn't tell him to do it. And he got very upset. And the devotee was crying. Prabhupada was yelling so much. I do that because I had something to do with it too. So I was like kind of responsible for it. Partly responsible. I didn't send the telegram, but I was also involved. But Prabhupada directed his yelling at him, so I let it happen. I'm still suffering for that, I think. Yes. But it was, you know, not an easy thing to be with Prabhupada personally. It was a wonderful thing, but it was not always an easy thing. It was an ecstatic. It was always ecstatic and blissful. But you learned a lot. You learned a lot about Srila Prabhupada. And you learned a lot about yourself being around the pure devotee, you know. Just how un-Krishna conscious you were, you could learn. When you were around someone who's Krishna conscious, you could see the gulf of difference. That's why when the devotee said yesterday, how do you, you know, how could you be around the pure devotee and not become offensive or see him in an ordinary way? But if you just had just simple vision, you could see just Srila Prabhupada's purity, his Krishna consciousness, and realize, you know, our lack of it. So in that sense, it wasn't so difficult. But being with him in Prabhupada, sometimes his intensity is difficult. So I think we need to stop here today, huh? Yes. And we'll continue tomorrow. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.